The outline of my talk. So first I would like to talk a little bit about the motivation, and the main motivation of this work is actually what do, if supersymmetry is there, is supersymmetry, is, if TV scale supersymmetry is indeed the physics beyond the standard model, what do we expect from this supersymmetry? And then the second point is how do we get motivated by these expectations from gauge mediation to electrolytic scale quivers, supersymmetric quivers, and why at least believe the, those quivers are well motivated. Then I will talk about two particular examples of models that we try to build. One of them we call vector-like Higgs, and the second of chiral-like Higgs. Both of them are models which try of electrolytic scale supersymmetry, which also try to address the flavor puzzle of the standard model at least partially. And at the end, I will conclude. So, first of all, supersymmetry, why it can be useful. And there are at least several motivations for supersymmetry. Here's the very partial list that we know that it can address the HPH hierarchy problem, it can improve gauge coupling unification compared to the unification that we have in the standard model, can accommodate viable dark matter candidate. If supersymmetry is indeed there, we already know several stuffs about the supersymmetry. And here are probably the main stuff. So first of all, we know that it is nearly flavor blind, and this nearly is very important because after all, we just have constraints. But these constraints are pretty stringent. They come mostly from flavor changing neutral current processes, which constrain the flavorful supersymmetry. We also know that it probably doesn't have big CP phases, and in some sense, this this constraint is so this constraint is not a synonym of this constraint, because we also have constraints here on CP phases from electric dipole moments, which have nothing to do with flavorful supersymmetry. These constraints are still here, and these are probably the most rigid constraints on supersymmetry that we have. We also know that it's either non-minimal or suffers from some mild degree of fine-tuning. So after the results of lab, we can be we more or less know that if we have indeed minimal supersymmetric standard model at the TEV scale, this advertisement here addresses the gauge hierarchy is not completely true. It still suffers from some mild degree of fine-tuning, of course not big fine-tuning as we have if we just have standard model and nothing else. Besides of this, we have several other problems of what we usually call minimal supersymmetric standard model. And I would say that one of the most interesting problems here is indeed what I called here MSSM coincidence problem, usually sometimes known as mu problem. So if we just take a look on the minimal supersymmetric standard model as it is, we find that in order to have a viable supersymmetric model, we should have this mu term, which is determined the superpotential, supersymmetric mass of Higgs up and Higgs down, roughly of the same scale as soft masses. However, a priori, this is perfectly supersymmetric term. This comes from Susie breaking. So it looks, without any extra explanation, like some miraculous coincidence that to the scales that should not have to do anything a priori with one another are at the same scale. In principle, one can add more requirements to this list, what we would like to have, to expect from supersymmetry, improved unification, dark matter candidate, as I was already talking. During this talk, I will concentrate on another point, which is usually not addressed together with all this list, and this is the flavor puzzle of the standard model, and I would like to motivate why at least it is conceivable to expect that in some sense flavor puzzle of the standard model is can be addressed in the same framework where we address this coincidence problem of the mu term of the standard model. So what is the standard model flavor puzzle? We know from our measurements that these ratios between the masses of the quarks, mass of the strange quark, mass of the top quark, mass of the strange quark of the bottom quark is a small number, something like 10 to the minus 2. And if we take the first generation, this number, of course, becomes even smaller. We also know that the structure of the CKM matrix is very, very hierarchical. All the angles there are not of order one, at least maybe except of one, Theta Kabibe, which can be, which is not so far away from order one. Other angles are not of order one. Everything here is perfectly natural. Technically, everything is perfectly natural. However, it can be a hint for the new physics. If we extend our model to be a supersymmetric model, all this flavor puzzle boils down to small numbers in the superpotential, more or less precisely what we have here. So explaining the new term problem in the MSSM and an attempt to address the standard model flavor puzzle within this framework, after all, boils down to explaining small numbers in the superpotential, which are technically natural, however, might have explanation. Why are they so small? So here's the review of one of the mediation patterns that people proposed lots of time ago, and the main, which is gauge mediation, and the main motivation for gauge mediation was, of course, that we expect the supersymmetry is nearly flavor blind. This mediation pattern is perfect in this sense. It's perfectly flavor blind, just because the supersymmetry is mediated to the standard model sector through gauge mediations, which are of course flavor blind. So this is just a cartoon picture of minimal gauge mediation that would have some pair of messengers which are in vector-like representations of the standard model, coupled to some field which get Susie preserving and Susie breaking vacuum expectation value. Since this is the minimal model, we even don't ask where does it come from. Of course, it should come from some dynamical Susie breaking sector. If we just have this superpotential, we find that Gaussian masses are formed at the one loop level. There are lots of diagrams for the scalar masses, but since this is just one of them, since they're all two-loop level and they all proceed through gauge interactions, these scalar masses are, of course, flavor blind. If we assume small Susie breaking, the small Susie breaking parameter, the Susie preserving parameter, we find that this is the order of magnitude where we get fermion masses, and those are Gaussian masses. So the main benefit of gauge mediation is that we have no sources of flavor violation, and a natural outcome of minimal gauge mediation is that Gaussian masses are of the same order of magnitude as scalar masses. As it might be considered maybe even the leading candidate to mediate Susie breaking, just because it cleanly explains the flavor puzzle of the standard model, it has set of its own disadvantages. And these disadvantages will also be our motivation for this. So the first disadvantage is that soft masses here are proportional to the gauge coupling, just because it's gauge mediation. And therefore, squarks are much, much heavier than sleptons. And in order to address the gauge hierarchy problem, we, of course, first of all, need stop to cancel the contribution to top divergence to Higgs. So this exacerbates the little hierarchy problem, which we have anyway in minimal supersymmetric standard model. Further, if we assume dynamical models, and here I mean dynamical models, so we do explain where does this Susie breaking vacuum expectation value come from, we often find that Gaussian mass is actually proportional to F to the third power instead of F. And this renders Gaussian masses even lighter compared to the scalars, and if this is the scenario, this makes hierarchy problem even more annoying, because then it's even not a little hierarchy problem. It essentially becomes not so little hierarchy problem when we should have our stops at the scale which looks more like 10 TeV rather than TeV. And besides of this, gauge mediation has its mu problem, which is sometimes considered to be even more severe than in other scenarios. Typically, if one tries to produce mu and b mu dynamically, one gets in supersymmetry that b mu is much, much larger than mu squared. Again, exacerbating the problem of tuning of this entire model. And there are, of course, lots of models to circumvent in this problem, I just don't bring the entire list of citations, but it is hard to find an appealing dynamical solution to new problem engaged mediation. There are, of course, lots of solutions which try to go, which try different ways around of this problem. There is a CP violation problem in generic gauge mediation. In principle, this is not so severe. For example, in minimal gauge mediation, it's not a problem. It's not a problem to set Gugino phases to zero. There is a standard problem of CP in gauge mediation, which is precisely as bad as in any other pattern, where you have the two different combinations of phases, A star B mu and Gugino mass mu, or which do enter EDMs, and you don't know how to explain why these phases are small, but in this sense Gugino mediation is by no means worse than any other scenario of gauge mediation. I personally do not know any plausible scenarios how to address this problem. So after all, you will be left with two phases. Because you can have, if you, for example, impose messenger parity, it doesn't come out of the box, but you can impose it, that you will find that the phases of Gluinos and Binovinos are the same phase. So you have the common phase for all Gugino's. After all, you will be left with precisely two phases, as I was talking about. It's by no means worse than any other mediation scenario. And if you take a look on constraints in EDM, yes, it poses you some constraints, but there are also some regions where cancellations occur and you can lead there. So in this sense, gauge mediation is definitely not worse than any other scenario. As far as I know, it's actually comes closer than any other scenario to address the CP problem. I would not like to say, that, of course, that it perfectly addresses it, but probably is the closest you can address CP problem among what people know. So now I would like to switch to idea of deconstruction. Maybe it looks now unrelated. I will show now why do we thinking about the idea of deconstruction. Where did the idea come from? We will use this idea in sense that we will take a look on different mediation scenarios, which were first presented as scenarios with extra dimensions, mediations of the Sousa breaking. And the idea of deconstruction, as it was presented in 2001 by Arkany, Hamid, Cohen, and Georgi, is that extra dimensional effects can emerge dynamically from calculable four-dimensional theories. In ideal case, the theory should be simple and UV-free. It's not always the case. In deconstructed models, the extra dimension is essentially lattice-sized. And when we lattice-size it, in four-dimensional model, the gauge group is enlarged to have two or even more standard model-like replicas. So why do we think about this? The main motivation is this pattern of mediation, which is usually dubbed Gugino mediation. And as it was first presented, it was five-dimensional scenario, which was also motivated by flavor blindness of the standard model. Actually, it's a little bit worse than regular gauge mediation, only in a sense that it doesn't explain. At least in this pattern, it doesn't really explain CP phases of Gugino's. It is perfectly flavor-blind, and in five dimensions, the idea is that we have Sousa breaking sector on one brain in five dimensions, MSSM chiral fields on another brain, and the gauge multiplets are bulk fields. So once we integrate out this extra dimension, say, which has some radius r at the scale of 1 over r, the scalar masses are suppressed, just because we have this volume through which we should propagate, so the breaking should propagate. Gauge fields do have their masses, and then scalar soft fields develop from the running. This five-dimensional model, of course, can be also be deconstructed, and one can reproduce important effects of Gugino mediation, and one of the important effects, of course, of Gugino mediation, aside that this is flavor blind, is that scalar masses are suppressed at the mediation scale in this quite simple two-site model. So I was talking that deconstructing just means latticization of the fifth dimension. Here, we don't need really lots of replicas. Two replicas is going to be enough. So we have two replicas of the standard model with the standard model matter fields charged under G standard model 1 and the standard model 2 connected directly to the Suzy breaking sector. Here we have link fields which are in bifundamental vector-like representations of standard model 1 cross standard model 2. So this very simple model is, first of all, is a three-scale model, and I would like to talk a little bit how does it behave depending on the scales. So we have, of course, this M, messenger mass scale in Suzy breaking sector, Suzy breaking scale, which is called square root of F, and the scale V. This is the scale where these link fields get expectation values and break two different gauge groups to the diagonal, which we will further identify with our standard model. Yes. So the first question is, in what sense does this two-site model mimic five-dimensional Gugino mediation? How good does this deconstruction work here? So in order to understand this, it's going to be useful to consider two different regimes that we can think about of this model, where the web of the link fields is much, much smaller than the messenger mass or much, much bigger than the messenger mass. In this regime, nothing really interesting happens. The gauge group is broken to the diagonal at some high scale V. Gugino gets this mass, alpha diagonal over 4 pi f over m, and the scalars are not screened. So this is the model of essentially of simple gauge mediation, when this, with the breaking of the diagonal, of course, occurs above the messenger scale, and the entire theory forgets that once it was this quiver. This regime is completely different. Here, if the link fields get expectation values below the messenger mass, the mass of the gauge field of the second group is alpha 2 over 4 pi f over m, the scalars, since they are charged under the left-handed group, they actually have, they get their masses only at four loops at the scale m. Below the scale v, where we break to this gauge group to diagonal, we do get two-loop contribution. But in order to get this two-loop contribution, we should put insertions of the webs of the link fields. So we necessarily have, in this expression, this factor of fv over m squared, just because if we don't have an insertion of the link field, this diagram is still zero, identically. Since we assume that v over m is small, this expression is, of course, much, much smaller. Square root of this expression is much, much smaller than Gugino mass. So for V much, much smaller than M, we get scalar screening. Namely, the dominant contributions to the scalar mass will come from the running and non-decoupling effect, something like some non-decoupling three-loop contributions I wouldn't like really to talk about. In this sense, it is very similar to 5D Gugino mediation. We can identify the scale V with the scale of 1 over radius of extra dimension as the scale where we have our Gugino masses and fermion masses, and the fermion masses are much, much smaller than Gugino masses. So what are advantages of these quivers, and what are open questions we can ask about this quiver? So first of all, we should remember that this quiver, at least, was a particular example, very non-minimal example, of gauge mediation. After all, it is indeed gauge mediation in the sense that when we set all the gauge couplings of the standard model to zero, the masses of Gugino's and of scalars are zero. So in this sense, it is indeed an example of gauge mediation. So, and since it's gauge mediation, it's perfectly flavor blind. Flavor blindness is not a feature of minimal gauge mediation, it's actually a feature of any gauge mediation. So here it is flavor blind. We also find that we have scalar suppression, and at least potentially it can compensate for Gigenoma suppression, as I was talking about, if it occurs. In the resulting spectrum can be even that leptons are lighter than electroweak Gigenos. The spectrum is, of course, very, very easy to find, but also very easy to exclude. I don't know what are the current bounds, but I would expect that if leptons are too light, people would already discover this at the LHC. And another interesting feature of this cluverse is that it naturally corrects the Higgs-Quarty coupling, which is a bottleneck to solve the problem of the little hierarchy problem. This correction comes from the D terms of Z primes and W primes. When two of these groups are broken to the diagonal, we still have heavy gauge bosons, and the D terms do give new contributions to the Higgs-Quarty. These corrections are numerically small. So if one takes seriously one of the examples of this deconstructed Gigenoma mediation, we find this effect qualitatively, it's by far not enough. So we can hope that maybe we can improve this model or understand why are they small and to have these corrections substantial. What is still difficult to achieve? So first of all, there's no built-in solution to mu or nu bmu problem. This is an open problem that we'll try to address. And we still face a little hierarchy problem. We do have a tool to solve this problem, but meanwhile, this tool doesn't do its job. So an immediate way how we what we can think about is a modification of this two-site model, and simultaneously we'll think about explaining smallness of quark masses. So it looks like one might think about a simple solution. That not scalars, of course, MSSM chiral fields are charged under the left-handed group. We can charge some of them under the right-handed group, and in this case, some of the Yukawa couplings at the renormalizable level will be forbidden. So here's the cartoon of what we are thinking about. This was a picture of deconstructed Gigenoma mediation. We can, and all the supersymmetric standard model fields were charged under this group. We can take the light fermion generation, so the first and the second generation, charge it under the second group, leave Higgs's and the third generation to be charged under the first group. And we will see this will also help us to address the new problem, but the immediate effect of this will be that if we try to write down renormalizable Yukawa couplings for light fermion generations, we cannot. Just because Higgs up and Higgs down are charged under this group, Q1, D1, U1, and this group, simple Yukawas are just not gauge invariant. So before I will go further and talk much more about this model, this is going to be our first model of vector like Higgs, I would like to talk a little bit about UV completion of this two-site model. So two-site model Gigenoma mediation can, what we showed in previous work, can naturally emerge from massive SQCD with two different mass scales. The main lessons that we learned from this UV completion, that I'm not going to talk about any more than one slide, is first of all that it is very easy to get suppressed Gigenoma masses. In order to get non-suppressed Gigenoma masses, we should work harder here. And if Gigenoma masses are suppressed, low-scale mediation regime is strongly favored by these models. And those are two lessons we learn from possible UV completions, known UV completions of these quivers. So we'll have in mind this dynamical model as a motivation for our further model building. I will try to remain agnostic about the precise nature of this UV completion. But what we also notice that the models which explain both the standard model flavor puzzle, at least address partially standard model flavors, and the new problem also favor low-scale regimes. So it's plausible that the models that I'm going to talk about will have to do at least something with these UV completions. Simple UV completions will be unable to produce all the couplings I'm going to talk about, but probably more sophisticated UV completions will be able to do this. Yeah.
Isn't the loss communication is strongly favored from UV, which yes. comes from
the... Oh, it comes from the point that that the genome masses that you have are highly suppressed, and you would like also to suppress your scalar masses, and you shouldn't allow too much running, not to render your stops tachyonic. So this is usually the main constraints. It's possible, as far as I know, to circumvent this problem, but you need much more wiggling with the spectras here. This can be quite generic. So this is the main motivation why, at least in scenario of deconstructed gauge mediation, it is plausible to think about very low scale gauge mediation. And this will also think here about very low scale regime. So let's take the first look of these models. Light fermions are charged under this coupling, under this second replica of the standard model. Higgses and the third generation are charged under the first standard model. And immediately we notice, of course, that this is not gauge mediation anymore, and it is going to be a flavorful model, just because by setting either gauge couplings or the first or the second standard model to zero, we do not set all the fermion masses to zero. So where will the mu term come from? At least we can forbid mu term by one of the discrete symmetries, or at least postulate that it was accidentally formed small at some very high scale, and then it is protected by non-renormalization. Then the next operator that we can write down, which will give us a mu term, is this operator. Insertion of two link fields, and chi for me now are link fields, so chi tilde, Higgs up and Higgs down. This is, of course, a dimension for operator and superpotential, so it's non-normalizable, should be suppressed by some scale which we call M star. If this is the origin of the new term, we can demand that this is precisely the soft mass, and in this case, the B mu term is small, because the B mu term is not formed above the scale of the link fields. At the scale of the link fields, it is formed by Wiener loop, and this is the expression for this B mu term, and it is, of course, small because it is loop suppressed. So we naturally get that B mu is much, much smaller than mu squared rather than big. How do we get large? Yes.
It does depend on M star. It's that they're independent.
A priori, those are independent parameters, but then at least I would like to think about forming light U covers at the same scale, and we will see that it will lead us more or less to the same scale. At least this was the main idea of this work, that both small numbers and superpotential, the new term, and light U covers are actually formed at the same scale. This is plausible to believe that they're formed at the same scale. And light generation U covers are, of course, forbidden in this model by gauge invariance. We can write down dimension 4 and dimension 5 operators in superpotential, like, for example, this operator, which is a U cover for the second generation, with one insertion of the link field. Some of them would demand one insertion, some of them would demand two insertions. And at least it's plausible to assume that it's the same scale which is responsible for the mu term and for the U covers. An important drawback, of course, is that since we just have two-site model, we'll be able to explain the smallness only of the second generation compared to the third generation. There's no way to explain two small numbers, M2 over M3 and one M1 over M2, just with having two-site model. We'll have to extend it at least to three-site model. So maybe we can think about this as kind of toy models. Three-site model will have their own problems, mostly with KK bars. Problem will be a little bit of a problem even here, but there it's much more severe. But here I will talk about two-site models, and here we will try to explain where I would say that we try to partially address the flavor puzzle. We try to explain the smallness of the first generation, of the second generation compared to the third generation. So what is the flavor structure? Let us first define a small number, which I would call I would call the sky over M star epsilon. If we would like that our effective field theory is valid, this must of course be a small number. M star should be much, much higher than the scale of the breaking to the diagram. And those are the structures of up-type sector fermions and down-type sector fermions in the flavor basis before we switched to fermion mass basis. So, of course, we have this anarchical block, which tells us immediately that we won't be able to get any hierarchy between the first and the second generation, and the same here. Just for purpose of simplicity, I write down here epsilon as one number. If we take, of course, seriously the standard model, we have two independent small numbers, which is leptonic epsilon and hadronic epsilon, just because if we think about these link fields and break into the diagonal, we have doublets of SU2 and we have triplets of SU3, just by decomposing of representations 5. Since we don't use here unification language, which I believe is misleading because everything happens way below the scale of unification, those are a priori two different numbers, and we can play with them a little bit more in order to adjust this U covers better. To keep this presentation simple, I will talk in terms of one small number.
No. What's the difference?
You can write down, here you will need insertions, it will be sufficient to, so what's the difference technically that you try to write down here U covers which couple the first and the second to the third generation. Here it's enough to insert something with quantum numbers of D and D bar, and you have this messenger. Here you need something which has quantum numbers of something like U, and you don't have this in 5-5 bar decomposition. So this is why those are squared, those are not. And this immediately tells you that rotating angles in the down type sector, in the right-handed down type sector, are going to be bit bigger than CKM rotating angles, just because this will enter CKM matrix, this will enter right-handed rotating angles. So what should we choose for epsilon? At least if we try to explain the hierarchy between the third and the second generation, it's natural that we choose the ratio between the chump quark and the top quark. We know that it's roughly 10 to the minus 2. So it's plausible to choose it to be around 10 to the minus 2. Then this is the CKM matrix that we get. Of course, this block is completely anarchical. Again, just in two-site model, there's no way to explain why all three angles are small, but we know actually that Kabibbo angle is not so small. In practice, this is 0.2. This, of course, doesn't match so good what we have because it's actually, this is 10 to the minus 2 in practice, 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 10 to the minus 1, 10 to the minus 2, and 10 to the minus 3. So this maybe matches up to one order of magnitude. Here, this number we should adjust with order one numbers here. And it's doable, but maybe not so beautiful. Again, probably we should treat it just as a toy model and extend it further, either by putting order one numbers or by putting extra structure. But this is more or less the CKM matrix that we get out of the box without putting any order one numbers. What are the soft masses? Light flavors get regular soft masses square from gauge mediation, first of all. It's a simple gauge mediation that we have the coupling between the second standard model to the messenger. The heavy flavors get their masses squared from Gugino mediations, and I will call this masses squared Gugino mediated. They are at least, this masses squared are at least one loop suppressed compared to the gauge mediation. These masses are diagonal in the flavor basis, but they are definitely not diagonal in fermion mass basis, and we should rotate them back to the fermion mass basis in order to see what are our flavor-changing neutral currents that we predict. If we perform this rotation, and merely at the leading order, because next to leading order, which here are zeros, is still going to be very important. At least at the leading order, if we perform this rotation, we see that off-diagonal components of left-handed squarks are proportional to the epsilon squared, of uptake squark also to the epsilon squared, and those are epsilons that I was talking about. This was this lower row of one down. It is proportional to epsilons rather than epsilon squared. So here's the mixing of the third generation with the right generations in the down type right-handed squark sector is a bit bigger. Those are the masses already, of course, filled without order one numbers, already in the basis of the fermion masses. So if we use this basis, now we can check what are our flavor constraints and whether we are within our flavor constraints or not, and what is going to be the bottleneck of this model. So first of all, what is going to be the spectrum of this model? And the spectrum, at least if it's low energy, if the break into the diagonal, the scale V, is relatively low scale, something like 10 TeV, and this is more or less what we imagine, scale of 10 TeV. The third generation scalar masses are formed at least at three loop. So they are significantly lighter, at least factor of 10, than the second generation and D genus. So we can expect, especially in the scenario where D genus are suppressed, that we are going to find these scalars much, much lighter than other scalars, which might be actually beyond the reach of the LHC. Again, this is natural, because we essentially just need stop and winos-binos in order to fix the hierarchy problem of the standard model at one loop. And they are lighter. Everything else can be at the scale of 5 or even 10 TeV, which is fairly natural still, but very hard for LHC to get there. An important point here is, of course, flavor constraints, because our soft masses are not diagonal in the fermion mass basis. In principle, we have three different sources of flavor constraints, but two of them are unimportant. So we have, of course, conventional box diagrams due to non-diagonal squark masses, and this is precisely the point where most of the constraints will come from. We will have box diagrams with the link fields, but those are going to be suppressed by V over M star to the fourth power. So those are not going to be important, given that the link fields are also heavy. Here we cannot say that all the squarks are heavy. We know that the bottom for something is light. And there are tree-level efficiencies mediated by Z prime, but we are thinking about our Z primes at the scale of 10 TeV, and this then is well within the bounds. So where do our constraints come from? Usually the main constraints come from KK bar and mu 2 gamma. In our model, mu 2 gamma is safe, also because it's mostly magnetic transition and we have highly suppressed A terms. So this is not constrained. However, we do have very stringent constraints from KK bar and new contributions from BB bar. It's easier to imagine first BB bar because we need just two insertions in the diagram, but it doesn't yield the strongest constraint. After all, the strongest constraint will come from KK bar. But let's take a look on the systems separately. So this is a new contribution to BB bar. We can get this diagram just with one insertion when B transits to D, and we have the soft mass, which connects the third generation and the fourth generation, both on this leg and on this leg. Here we have gluinos which are running in the loop. What helps us here is, of course, kind of remnants of alignment when we know that these rotation angles are connected to the CKM angles and those are small. We don't really have decoupling here because effectively the mass which is running inside this loop is gluino mass, which is not so big, and the scalar bottom mass. and scalar bottom mass is light, so it doesn't decouple. So there's no decoupling in this diagram. There are remnants of alignment in this diagram. The leading contribution, epsilon squared, comes from the operator where we have all the fermions right-handed. However, this is a relatively weakly constrained operator if we take a look on the bounds. More interesting operator comes from constraint comes from the operator which connects right-handed and left-handed squarks, namely when we have here insertion of epsilon squared, if this is left-handed, epsilon if it's right-handed, and it's the suppression before all the loop factors arises to be epsilon to the third power, which is roughly 10 to the minus 6. And if we check it numerically, it is actually order 1 allowed.
CP violated part or not?
This is from CP violated. As we will see that from KK bar, I will have to consider non-CP violating because CP violating
is too stringent. So sorry for this diagram, the bar should move here, of course. From here to here. It's, of course, shouldn't be a bar. The bottleneck of the entire model, it turns out to be KK bar, and because we have very stringent constraint of the operator which couples right-handed and left-handed chiralities. On each leg here, we need two insertions, just because of the leading order, we didn't, we had the first and the second generations were diagonal in their base, were diagonal proportional to the identity in their flavor basis. So rotating identity matrix, we still get identity matrix. We need two insertions here in this language. We should go through the third generation. And therefore, there are two insertions here and going through scalar bottom here, two insertions here going through the third generation quark bottom component here, which I call Q3. I'm using, of course, here the language where electrolytic symmetry is not broken. And this is the leading contribution to this diagram. Let's compare it to what we have. First of all, we will have very stringent bound if the contribution is real. If we have order one phase here, we violate the standard model bounds at least by two orders of magnitude. So we are forced to assume at this point that the phase in the right-handed sector, which is the relevant phase here, is almost aligned with the phase in the left-handed sector. So this will need either coincidence or some extra model building or extra structure into this entire story that I'm not going to talk about. Meanwhile, this is what we are going to assume. So the contribution scales, if we just compare this mixing angle, so the CKM matrix as two elements of the CKM matrix times one epsilon, which is also 10 to the minus 6. And here's the illustrative example from non-CP violating constraints, from delta MK, which is CP conserving constraint from Gluino, which is 1 TeV, epsilon chosen to be 10 to the minus 2, and of course all the one numbers adjusted to give correct CKM matrix, and tangent beta equals 20. So we see that we need some help from decoupling. This is the scale. This is the scale of the. This axis is the bottom mass, and this this axis is light quark mass. And as we of course expect, light quark mass. The constraints are largely insensitive to the light quark mass. In some sense, it is the sanity check that it has no sensitivity just because the mass of the light quark just cancels out from this diagram. So we are left with the constraint that mass of its bottom, even to satisfy CP conserving constraints, should be around 600 GeV. Just a second. No. Okay. So the shaded region is the region of which is allowed by delta MK. If we assume maximal phase, the pink region is allowed by delta K. Here's this pink region. It's the, pink, the region of coincidence. So this is what I say. It's either very, very specific coincidence or some extra structure is needed. So we believe that it's just going to be extra structure. So we need something like 600 GeV's bottom mass to satisfy this constraint. The little hierarchy problem. So we don't have atoms. So we know that this bottom and top masses cannot really be even 600 GeV if we don't have extra contribution to the quartic of the Higgs. And we do have these new contributions. They come from Z prime and W prime D terms. In this case, these contributions have the form which is very similar to the D terms of the standard model. And this is probably the safest form because these terms preserve a custodial symmetry, so there's no new contribution to rho parameter, or T parameter, as it's usually called. This contribution is proportional to delta. So why is this delta small in pure gauge mediation, and why is it not so small or can be actually substantial in our model? Those are the couplings of the first and the second standard model. This is the soft mass of the link field, and we should assume that we have substantial soft mass for the link field just because it's charged under the second standard model, and it just fields of soft contributions of gauge mediation. This is the mass of heavy gauge genome. In pure gauge mediation, this correction is tiny because people are usually forced to choose this ratio tiny to ameliorate the Landau-Pohl problem. We had the entire standard model metasector charged under one gauge group, link field charged under this gauge group. So we are running into the problem of Landau-Pohl, and in order to ameliorate this problem, this ratio was, of course, chosen to be tiny, or at least as small as possible. In our model, the situation is different since most of the matter is moved to be charged under the second sector. If it's moved to be charged under the second sector, we actually have much more troubles with the Landau-Pohl of the second sector rather than the first sector. So it is natural to choose this ratio at least to be of order 1, or even G2, to be smaller than G1. In this case, this delta is not so small, and these corrections are substantial. And these are the built-in corrections in this model to the Higgs quartic. We do not put it by hand. It is already in the model, and it can be weak. So this is more or less what I had to say about the vector-like Higgs model, that it works up to this point of phase in KK bar sector. It explains the hierarchy between the second and the third generation. This is what we have now. Now I will turn to a bit different model, a bit small variation on this model, which, however, gives very different phenomenology. We cannot really claim that this model, what I usually call chiral Higgs model, works, because it needs some, because it has some bottleneck, which is the mass of B quark. However, it has the interesting phenomenology, and maybe this problem can be fixed first. So what is the layout of this model? We try here a different idea. We try to forbid here mu term by gauge invariance, precisely as we forbid in the first model light generation we cover. So we just separate Higgs up and Higgs down, and charge Higgs down under the gauge, under the second group, gauge group. So first of all, we should find anomaly-free configuration, because otherwise there's no point about talking about this model. It turns out that there can be a little twist which helps us with this. With this anomalies, we can just move the field L2 to be charged under G1 instead of G2. Then the configuration is anomalous-free. Then the mu term is, the leading order mu term is forbidden. We can write down this superpotential, which is renormalizable with one insertion of the link field.
G2 is the one that couples most strongly to the SUNY breaking, or is it G1?
G2. Sorry that I do not have a picture here, so maybe I should use this picture. So we had this G2 with the light fermions. What we do here, we take this H down, move it to be charged here, and in order to cancel the anomalies, take one of the doublet lepton fields and move it back to be charged. So in some sense, it's a very simple twist, and since they have H down and L have effectively the same quantum numbers, anomalies are still canceled. So the new term is formed here by this operator. Maybe it's not as beautiful as in previous model, because in previous model it was precisely the scale of breaking to the diagonal, which is roughly 10 TeV times 1 epsilon, which we were forced by flavor physics to choose to be 10 to the minus 2, and it brought us to the correct ballpark. Here we should put at least one small number by hand here. We should here assume that this parameter is of order 10 to the minus 2, just because it's renormalizable operator for the Higgs field, and the solution here is actually, in this sense, very, very similar to NMSSM solution. Just we have the field which will give this new term for free inside the model. It's a link field. What is the flavor structure of this model? We didn't change anything compared to the first model regarding the uptype sector. So this is the structure of the uptype sector. We have something very, very different in the downtype sector, and it looks immediately that it's going to be, at least naively, it looks that it's going to yield untenable model. However, this expectation is not completely correct. So we have this order one contributions to first light generations. This new epsilon, because I would like to a little bit vary the scale compared to the scale of this epsilon. So here I do keep different epsilons. Epsilons which connect the third generation to the Higgs down and the first generation. Naively, we would expect immediately that it will predict untenable CKM mass matrix, just because this rotation angle should be between the first generation and the third generation should be of order 90 degrees, and we should drop it. However, this naive expectation, at least regarding this problem of this model, is not so correct. And the point is that we should first analyze what is a tangent beta in this model. And it turns out that if we study this issue carefully, that we find here that we are in the regime of large tangent beta. This regime actually was analyzed by Dobrescu and Fox in 2010. If we place Higgs up and Higgs down on different nodes, we have that the soft mass of Higgs down is much, much smaller, naturally, than Higgs up is much, much smaller than MH down. Just because this is gauge mediation, this is Gino mediation. And one can do the actual calculation and find that this is negative. So electroweak symmetry breaking is triggered in this model. It is negative and very small compared to MH down. B mu is still small by the same argument as in previous model. So if we also remember that it's plausible to have Gino mass suppression, so Ginos are of order 100 GeV, then we just find that B mu tangent beta is of order MH down, and we easily find, and B mu is also small because it's just driven by the Gino masses, we easily find that tangent beta is of order 10 to the 4th, and it's actually not so hard to get it of order 10 to the 5th. So we cannot say that this matrix is directly related to the mass of the down-type quarks. It's something very, very different. So in this region of parameter space, the masses of down-type quarks are largely determined by one-loop contributions induced by the couplings to H-up dagger, and H-down does not directly determine the CKM matrix. What we should do, strictly speaking, and since all the degrees of freedom of H-down are very heavy and H-up is relatively light, so the entire electroweak symmetry breaking is due to VEF of H up, and we should just integrate out H down. So these couplings to H up down are formed at one loop, and they are also very sensitive to the scalar spectrum. So it is going to be a little bit less naive than just taking formula of Dobrescu and Fox and saying that they are formed at one loop, so here's one loop. Because these masses of the first and the second generation, they have scalar running in this loop. So integrating out the scalar, we also have decoupling of the first generation. We do not have it for the third generation. So after all, we get the mass matrix for the down-type quarks, which is a hybrid matrix of coupling to the Higgs down and Higgs up dagger. After we integrate out everything carefully, we find that this entry of the mass of the big quark, the dominant contribution, comes from the loop, which is the loop of H, loop coupling to H up dagger. All other entries are still dominated by tiny cosine beta, which is of order of magnitude 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 5. And this is the matrix that we should now diagonalize. This is the physical mass matrix of the down type fermions. And of course, it's a hybrid type matrix because the coupling here is coupling, the dominant coupling here is coupling just different Higgs. So after we diagonalize and we assume suppressed Giugino masses such that B mu is still small, which is driven by Giuginos, it is easy actually, it's very easy actually to get here a tenable CKM matrix. So one finds that the rotations in down-type sector are smaller, are even smaller than an up-type sector, so we end up with this CKM matrix, precisely as in the first model. The problem here is the mass of the B quark, because it has the suppression of epsilon prime, and this is the exact value of the loop. Well, up to order one, up to number which is smaller than 2 that I didn't put here. At least factors of order 2 and 3 I kept here. It's of course proportional to the new parameter. It should be suppressed by the soft mass. This is the soft mass which doesn't decouple. And unfortunately, it can give us tenable values only if epsilon prime is of order 1. If epsilon prime is of order 1, we can, of course, question the validity of our effective field theory. So, unfortunately, the B mass is an unresolved issue of this model. But what is very interesting with this model, that it actually predicts pretty non-standard phenomenology of uplifted supersymmetry, or at least hybrid uplifted supersymmetry, where all the degrees of freedom of Higgs down are very, very heavy, and more minimal supersymmetry. So at least I hope that there can be one more phenomenological effort to solve this problem of the bottom quark. So conclusions. We presented models which solve the new problem of supersymmetry. Partially explain the standard model flavor puzzle, and up to at least one KK bar bottleneck satisfy precision flavor constraints. They also ameliorate the little hierarchy problem, and we do have built-in mechanism for this little hierarchy problem. So there are also important open questions here that embedding, first of all, I didn't say anything here about neutrino masses and mixing. I don't know whether it's possible to embed it. At least we have some information about this sector. We didn't make any effort. Probably one should try. And there's a big quark mass, of course, problem with chiral Higgs's model. And there is, of course, problem with the phase in KK bar mixing for the first model, which probably also asks for more model building and more structure to explain the alignment of the spaces.
Second model doesn't have a KK bar problem? The second model probably does have a KK bar problem. We didn't try to check it just because it doesn't really make sense to check it when you do, when your big quark mass turns out to be 200 MeV at best. So this was the bottleneck. Probably it will have very, very similar KK bar constraints just because, well, maybe it's not so, well, sorry, it will be better. Probably it will not overcome the constraints. It definitely will be better just because the mixing angles in this hybrid type matrix is much, much smaller because you have this cosine, which is some point times the mass. And here the epsilon squared are in correct place instead of being hit.
Except the fact that, as you said,
the
epsilon prime has to be
one,
you lose that.
Yes, you lose that. So should probably so there is definitely a tension. If you somehow enlarge this mass without touching this row, then it will probably work better. I don't know whether it will work, it will definitely work better because the epsilon stand in correct places. Yeah.
Thank you, Andre, again.